This is Taking On Sports, where you'll find the best takes on all of the sports stories that need to be taken on. Like today, I take on the Pistons with their terrible trade deadline and why they're the worst-run team in the NBA right now. And then in part two, my brother joins me, and we take on all of the best matchups of Super Bowl 58. All right, so today was the NBA trade deadline day, and the Pistons lost the NBA trade deadline. There's always a winner and a loser. The winner's probably the Knicks, and the loser is definitely the Detroit Pistons. I want to talk about Troy Weaver here for about 10 minutes. I'm not going to talk too long because I'll end up just rambling. Why was Troy Weaver allowed to make trades? I just don't understand his game plan of team building. There's two problems with Troy Weaver: timing and just his trade targets. Let's start with timing. Bojan Bogdanović gets traded for Quentin Grimes, Malachi Flynn, Ryan Arcidiacono, couple of seconds. And last year, the reports were Bojan Bogdanović, there were offers on the table for two first-round picks for Bojan. And Troy Weaver said no. Why? Why? I don't care if they were protected 2057 first-round picks. Why would you not take that? Bojan is in his mid-30s, not a great defender, solid defender. He's not awful. He's a net negative, but he's not, you know, bad. He's not a rebounder. He's not a leader. He's not an assist guy. He's a shooter. And someone who's willing to give you two first-round picks for him, which, by the way, Troy Weaver is remarkably solid with first-round picks. Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren. He gets good players. I like Asar Thompson. Asar Thompson just can't shoot, but you like him as a player. He just, unfortunately, with not a lot of shooting around him, there's nothing you can do. So why wasn't Bojan traded for first? Instead, he's traded for a second or 2 seconds, whatever it is. It really doesn't matter. Alec Burks goes in the deal, too. You couldn't get Alec Burks on a different deal? Marvin Bagley. Marvin Bagley gets traded after you sign him to a 3-year extension. Oh my gosh. I just don't understand. And that leads to his targets. Troy Weaver's, like, the first trade he made was for Dennis Smith Jr. Another failed lottery pick. Marvin Bagley brought in Josh Jackson, James Wiseman. Failed lottery pick after failed lottery pick, failed lottery pick, failed lottery pick. I understand in Detroit you have to take big swings, but at what point do you realize these failed lottery picks fail for a reason? James Wiseman, I can somewhat understand for some other team because Wiseman just didn't play a lot in Golden State, and Golden State runs a very, like, basketball IQ filled offense, and James Wiseman's just more of a go-getter, which is fine for a different team. But Detroit already had Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren. They didn't need James Wiseman. They don't need James Wiseman now. He's still on the team, though. Yet, Troy Weaver's going to go get these failed lottery picks. And guys who can't shoot. I mean, it seems like Quentin Grimes is a fine player, and it's cool that he was teammates with Marcus Sasser and all of that fun jazz. Like, great. Good for you. But I saw it put nicely today that Quentin Grimes is a 3-and-D guy, but he's more D than 3, which is not really what the Pistons need. Now, do the Pistons need defenders? Yeah, they're terrible on defense. They're awful. But he's not going to fix it. He's not going to all of a sudden fix the defense. What they do need is shooting. And one player can fix that a little bit. I mean, heck, they just traded away two 40% shooters. Or at least close to it with Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks. This team who had no shooting now has less. And, okay, fine. They're getting, you know, worse now because what was Bojan going to give you? Which, again, by the way, we can go back to the timing thing. But, okay, you have to trade these guys, right? One, there had to be a better offer out there. You can't tell me that was the... you, or at least you have to negotiate better. I mean, what trade has Troy Weaver made that you're like, wow, Pistons won that deal? I can't really think of one. I can't. Sadiq Bey was a good player. What'd they get for him? James Wiseman. Why was Sadiq Bey just James Wiseman, a player that nobody wanted and a player who doesn't even fit with your own team? What is Troy Weaver's plan? I just flat out don't understand. The team has no shooting. Now has less shooting. You bring in a more D than three guy. And the team isn't any better for the future, which is what I was going to get to. The team is no better for 2025, 2026 than they were a month ago. What is Marcus Sasse, or excuse me, what is Quentin Grimes going to get us? What? How many wins is he adding? Almost none. And great, you're tanking for better draft position this year. One, the Pistons with the guys they had were already the worst team in the league. This is a bad draft. Now, again, we may think it's a bad draft, and who knows, there might be gems in this. And again, Troy Weaver, if he still has a job come the draft, might be able to find somebody. And maybe Troy Weaver should go work in the scouting department, but he shouldn't be a GM because the guy can't trade. And I want to wrap up by talking about how are the Pistons going to get better? Because let me tell you guys, it's through trades. Drafting, they've done a fine job. You're going to bring in guys through the draft. They need to get more, but there's got to be guys available. All of these things. They've done a fine job. You can hit on their misses all you want, but they've done a fine job. It's through trades. At least when they brought in Blake Griffin, they made a swing to try and get a guy who they could build around. It didn't work, but they tried. And I'm okay with trying something. And so, come this offseason, when Troy Weaver hopefully gets canned, and hopefully Tom Gorse thinks about selling the team, they look to make a swing. There's going to be some disgruntled star out there who the rest of the league is going to be kind of, okay, well, maybe. And not Zach LaVine, please. The guy has like 4 years left on his deal. It's some insane number. Like, I'm talking somebody who you can actually build around, who you can actually bring in. It would help Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey. What's Zach LaVine going to do besides take the ball out of the hands of our two best players right now? Bring in somebody who's a good player but can work with these kids. Maybe look for Paul George. Paul George maybe wants out of L.A.? Put him with Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey, who will be another year older, and Jalen Duren. Then you have something interesting. That's the type of move they need to make. Look for a wing who you can bring in the offseason, but they'd have to do it through trades, and I don't trust Troy Weaver to make a trade at all. It's got to be somebody new, and that's the thing, is Troy Weaver's already destroyed this team so far that how long will the new GM have before Cade Cunningham wants out? Now, he's going to sign his rookie extension, and then there will be 1 or 2 years after that, so you're not talking extremely imminent. But you're still talking about something that we have to think about now. You've got to make money moves now, or else Cade Cunningham is going to go. And Cade Cunningham's really good. He's going to demand out. You better make moves that actually lead to this team winning. Because we have someone to build around in Cade Cunningham. We have good players with Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren. You better fill out a damn roster. And I can tell you it's not going to be with Troy Weaver trading for failed lottery picks. It's not going to be with Troy Weaver waiting too long to trade Bojan Bogdanović. It's going to be making good basketball move after good basketball move. Not just at the draft in the summer, but actually doing it during the season, actually doing it when it matters, with guys who are already in the league. That's how you got to make moves. Yeah, they're a bad team right now. They should have traded Bojan Bogdanović. They should have traded Alec Burks. How Bojan doesn't get a first-round pick, I don't even care if it's a protected future first. How Bojan doesn't get a first-round pick is ridiculous. It's terrible negotiating, and last year they could have gotten two first-round picks, and there was no reason he shouldn't be off the team then. Troy Weaver's a failed GM, Tom Gorse is a failed owner, and right after the Lions start to figure their crap out, the Pistons continue to show that they're the worst run team in sports, maybe. Worst run team definitely in the NBA. The Oakland A's might be the worst team run in sports, but this is the worst team run in the NBA, the Detroit Pistons, and it's not close. Troy Weaver just added to his legacy as one of the worst GMs in a long time in the NBA. Find some real players. Find ways to win games. Don't just put guys together. Let's put a team together. And right now, he hasn't done it. Man, Pistons got a big offseason coming up because it's time to start worrying about Cade Cunningham. It's time because this trade deadline set the Pistons back another year. They are no better now and in no better position than they were last year. They're literally in no better position. In fact, they might be worse because it's another year of Cade Cunningham gone. This is what we put Cade on the bench for last year? This? Ridiculous. Alrighty, I'm already all fired up. Let's talk about a team that I'm rooting against hardcore. The San Francisco 49ers. They're favored over top of the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to bring my brother in. We're going to talk a little NFL. Going to talk a little Super Bowl. Talk about the biggest matchups of the game. We're not just going to give you the, what's the key to the game? What's Mahomes' legacy? Or Taylor Swift, her name isn't even going to come up. We're going to talk about who actually decides who wins and loses. What actually is going to be the key? Not just, how great is Mahomes? Because no matter what, if the Chiefs win, it's going to be Mahomes. If San Francisco wins, who knows what it's going to be. It will not be about, man, how great of a game this was. Because people just give up on that. Same way that people just blame Dan Campbell for the loss of the Lions. Because it's way too easy to pick on that. Or to pick a storyline rather than to actually watch the game and actually think about something. So we're going to tell you in advance all of the important things to think about after the game so that you have that when people are just talking about, you know, Mahomes or talking about Purdy after the game. So there you go. Let's bring in my brother, Will. We're going to cue the music and we'll talk about Super Bowl 58 right after the break. Alrighty, ready to talk Super Bowl. My brother Will is here, and Will, it's Super Bowl 58, and everybody's doing content on the Super Bowl, of course. So I wanted to focus a little bit differently. We are going to pick the game, but we're not going to give you 1,000 prop bets. We're not going to tell you what the legacy of whatever means. We're going to give you some key matchups, who's going to win those matchups, and at the end, we'll tell you who's going to win the game and why, and it probably will be based on the matchups that we talk about. And so I texted you earlier, and I said, okay, give me 3 matchups for the game and who's going to win that matchup. And so let's dive right into it. What's your first one?
First one is 2 offensive gurus in Andy Reid versus Shanahan. It's going to be very interesting to see. Because funny enough, Andy Reid has not had the best offense this year. His defense has carried him through. San Francisco's had a pretty solid offense and defense. So I'm really curious to see how well Andy Reid can keep up, I guess, at this point with Kyle Shanahan. That's my first matchup, and I think the winner of that is going to be Kyle Shanahan, only because Andy Reid just doesn't have the receiving core still. It's Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce versus the world. I know that Rashid Rice has really come in at the last bit of that of the year. He's really picked it up a little bit for him, so probably a little bit of safety net, but it really is Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes versus the world, where Kyle Shanahan's got, I list them all, but I'd be here until midnight my time. So, I believe Kyle Shanahan will win that first, will win the offensive side of this matchup.
Yeah, so if you're going by your matchup, who's just going to win the offensive scheming, I think you're right. I think Kyle Shanahan wins the offensive scheming. Because that takes the Patrick Mahomes just being Superman out of it. Because that's not what you're talking about here, right? You're talking about who's going to draw up the right game plan and attacking the defense. And That's Kyle Shanahan's specialty. That's Andy Reid's specialty as well. Andy Reid, a little bit more of a play designer, to where Kyle Shanahan's a little bit more of a schemer. So I think I'm agreeing with you here. I think I'm going to lean that Kyle Shanahan will have the better scheme. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win the game or score more points. That just means that his game plan is going to be there at the end. I like the way you're talking about that. I think Kyle Shanahan's going to be able to scheme the run game. I think that's so important. He's going to scheme the run game to attack the Chiefs. The Chiefs are really good in the secondary, but I think it's going to be the run game that Kyle Shanahan's going to be creating with Kyle Juszczyk as kind of the guy. Watch where Kyle Juszczyk is on the field at all times, because I think that he's going to show you where the play's going to go. And I think Kyle Shanahan's going to use him and George Kittle as blockers so well.
Yeah. And Deebo Samuel, too. I think now that he's had another week to heal up, I really think Deebo Samuel is going to be an asset in the run game as well, outside of Christian McCaffrey. I mean, of course, they got Christian McCaffrey, but Deebo Samuel is going to be the guy where they're going to probably throw up some kind of cutesy play, but they have the offense to do those cutesy plays.
Let's go to my first matchup, and because you brought up one of the coaches, I'm going to stick with that, and I'm going to go with Steve Spagnuolo versus this San Francisco offensive line. San Francisco's offensive line is good. It's not great. It's not Detroit Lions good or something like that. It's good. And yeah, Kyle Shanahan does a good job of using it. But Steve Spagnuolo is so good at bringing blitzes from so many different spots without you knowing where he's bringing it from. And his ability to mix coverages and to mix attacks, I think it's going to be so important for the San Francisco offensive line on Sunday to make sure Brock Purdy stays clean. Purdy's small. Purdy is a processor. He's going to need time. He's not just someone who grips and rips like someone like maybe Patrick Mahomes will. Now, we saw in the game against the Lions, and my heart just sunk into my stomach as I mentioned the game against the Lions. I'm still not over it. We saw Purdy in the first half wasn't ready. He was not there. But Purdy in the second half, read, not there, run. And he was so good in the second half. Now, the Lions might have done some bad stuff. Whatever. Doesn't matter. But Purdy was really good. And that's the San Francisco offensive line needing to keep him upright, giving him time to process. But Steve Spagnuolo has done this a long, long time. So while Kyle Shanahan may have the better offensive scheme, I'm going to flip it and go Steve Spagnuolo, though. His defensive scheme is going to cause problems for Brock Purdy the entire game. He's going to be mixing it up. He's had 2 weeks to prepare, just letting Andy Reid focus on the offense. Those two guys work so well together because it feels like Andy Reid says, hey, Spags, you do your thing. I'm going to do mine. You do your thing. And he works with Matt Nagy on the offense, and then Steve Spagnuolo over on the defense just does his thing, and he's got a defense of young dudes who look up to him, and Spagnuolo is going to cause hella problems for Brock Purdy in this game.
Yeah, there's a reason why they're the number four defense in the NFL, which kind of brings me to sort of my next matchup, Brock Purdy versus himself. We saw what happened with Baltimore, right? Just a shit show. Four interceptions. It was like Brock Purdy, and again, I'm sorry, Brad, in the beginning of the Lions game. He just wasn't there, and it was the whole game. But then you look at Dallas, what he did against Dallas, put up 42 points against Dallas, right? 252 passing yards, fine, but he had four touchdowns himself, right? It was him in the passing game, and it goes back to my first point, you know, the offensive scheming and like what you brought up with the run game with Christian McCaffrey. They can also use him in the run game. It's giving him that vote of confidence that, hey, I know this is a top four defense, but you have the skill set and the skill players around you to be able to check down, to run it yourself. You got a good offensive line. Run it towards the, you know, up the middle if you need to. Run around the outside. you have options. It's Brock Purdy versus himself in this whole game.
So who wins? Good Brock Purdy or bad Brock Purdy?
I think it's good. I think good Brock Purdy is going to come out, win or lose. I think this is going to be a great game for him, just because he's got a healthy team around him. That's going to give him a little more confidence. And like you said, the offensive line, yeah, there's going to be a lot of schemes coming from Spagnuolo, but that offensive line has been good enough to keep him protected through the playoffs and through most of the season.
I love this one. I think this one's a really good matchup, and we probably should have led off with this one because I think this is might be the key to the entire game. We could stop talking after this one. I think you might have the best one. Brock Purdy, we've seen him be really good. We've seen him be really bad. You brought up the two perfect games, and then you can just go to the NFC title game, first half, second half. Purdy wasn't good in the first half. He was really good in the second half, and he wins the way that you just brought up. 250 yards, he may not throw for a ton of yards. I mean, he's got McCaffrey behind him. He doesn't need to throw for a ton of yards, but he puts the ball in the end zone, which is the important part. He plays a little bit like Brady did. Brady wouldn't necessarily have 500 yards. Now, Brady could get 500 yards. That's the separator here. But Brady would be perfectly happy with 225 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. He would have no issue with that. That's the way Purdy needs to play. I just don't see it. I don't think you're going to get that very good Brock Purdy. I think that we saw in the biggest game of the year against Baltimore that it didn't work. And we saw it be... We saw him struggle. We saw him struggle big time. So I was listening to PTI on my way home. They post their show as a podcast. And so I was listening, and they were doing a 5 Good Minutes with Steve Young. And Steve Young talked with Brock Purdy. And he said the one thing that he told Brock Purdy was, don't even look at Mahomes, because you can't do what he can do. You need to play your way of processing and not trying to make big plays like Mahomes does. Mahomes drags his team. Purdy is not. Purdy is a cog in the machine. He's a big cog, but he's a cog in the machine. And I just think that's really hard to do. I think it's really hard to not look at Mahomes and then try and play Superman against him. It's why Lamar struggles against him in the playoffs. It's why Josh Allen struggles against him in the playoffs, because in the regular season, Mahomes just plays the game. And Superman can beat Mahomes in the regular season. But Mahomes puts on the cape in the postseason, and those guys go and they crumble because they're trying to match him. And I think Purdy's going to, whether he thinks he's going to or not, whether he focuses on not doing it, not putting on the cape, he's going to try, and he's going to put a couple of balls in harm's way.
So you think this is going to be, I know they're kind of similar quarterbacks in the style that they play. But Matt Ryan versus Tom Brady, you think this is going to be one of those matchups, or do you think it's more of a unique circumstance with this?
Is it Matt Ryan? Maybe. They play different styles. This is, honestly, this is more Drew Brees-ish. Maybe a more mobile Drew Brees? I don't know. Because that's what...
Brock Purdy, you're saying.
Yeah, Brock mobile. Purdy is more mobile Drew Brees, where... He just needs to focus on putting the ball in the spot. Mm-hmm. If Mahomes throws a dagger downfield to Valdez-Scantling, or they get a big play with Travis Kelce, that doesn't mean you throw one up to Ayuk. And that's what I'm afraid he's going to do. I definitely think he might do that.
I don't know. I think after, 2 weeks to prepare, what he's endured through the last, I won't even just say the playoffs, but in the last, 5-6 weeks? Because what week was that when they played Baltimore? That was like week
15, 14, pretty late.
Right? So like late, but after that, Brock Purdy has been really good. He's learned to win, and it proved it through the playoffs. I mean, this guy is a good quarterback, and I'm really getting sick and tired of the Brock Purdy haters who are like, well, he's not good, so he doesn't belong in the top tier quarterbacks. He doesn't belong in here. It's like, he does. Is he flashy? No. But is he winning? Yes. I mean, this guy is a 7th round draft pick, right? And has now turned it around and is now in the Super Bowl. I mean, this is 2 years later. He's in the Super Bowl. This guy only knows how to win now. So I believe that Brock Purdy, you're going to get the good Brock Purdy this coming Sunday. He will put up probably, I would say, like 300 yards. He'll put up 3 or 4 touchdowns. Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be, well, maybe not 300 yards. You're right. Maybe like 200. But if they can get into the red zone, okay, right, into the red zone, right now, this year in the red zone, Brock Purdy is 60%, okay, completion, with 11 touchdowns, one pick. 11 touchdowns, one pick. That is so important down there. So if they can get down to the red zone, it's over. It's over, for at least on the offensive side. Now, the defensive side, obviously, could be a whole other story because you still have to stop Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and you have to stop Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce, and that is my matchup. And I'm looking at one-on-one here. Now, San Francisco is going to play a decent amount of zone. But my one-on-one matchup.
Oh, I can't wait for you to say this.
Fred Warner versus Travis Kelce. You have the best coverage linebacker versus the best receiving tight end. And Kelsey's been great since the playoffs started. And Fred Warner, we know how good he is. Now, quite a few people talked about leading into the NFC title game was, the Lions throw the ball over the middle more than any team in the league. That's where Fred Warner is. And you didn't hear Fred Warner's name for nothing because the Lions were able to attack it. Now, can Fred Warner stick to Travis Kelce? Just stick on him, because that's one thing. The Lions are going to scheme a bunch of dudes open over the middle with Amon-Ra St. Brown and with, of course, Sam Laporta, Josh Reynolds. They scheme a ton of dudes over the middle to where...
You guys have a better receiving core than Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly, no doubt. But in Kansas City throws the ball outside unless they're going to Kelce. They go outside to Rice. Sometimes they bring a guy up over the middle, but... outside to Pacheco, outside to Jerick McKinnon, outside to Rashee Rice, outside to, you know, Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, whoever you want. You know, all of these guys who are going to drop the ball. And over the top to Valdes-Scantling. And so then you have Travis Kelce over the middle. Now, Kelce can attack you both inside and out. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if you get a lot of Kelce outside the numbers. But Warner can shut down this game. He can shut down. If he holds Kelce... to, let's say, 5 catches in the game, San Francisco will win.
Oh, 100%. There's just
that's it. That's it. If Warner is on Kelce like crazy, like white on rice, then San Francisco wins the game. I don't care about anything else that happens. That's going to be such a big deal.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if Andy Reid decides to get Kelce out on the flats, out onto these post out routes, to see if he can stretch Fred Warner out and those linebackers, to see if they can get them spread out a little bit. That way, you know, it won't be such a shutdown because, yeah, Kelce is the most important part. So it's going to be interesting to see if they put Fred Warner not just in the middle, but they put him on the outside. They kind of put him in a nickel formation. That's a great point. I'm glad that you're shining a light on Fred Warner, because Fred Warner has been doing it for a few years now and is probably one of the better linebackers in the league. I really love that take because it's 100% true. If you can find a way to shut down Kelce, you have to force Mahomes to either, A, do two things. One, run the ball, which, you know, obviously he's going to be tired. He's athletic, but he's technically not really a runner. And force it into the hands that haven't been there for him. Like I said, yeah, Rashee Rice has been better, but it's still not reliable, and especially in a big spot like this. So I love that take.
I think that it's still going to be Travis Kelce who wins this game. His experience and Andy Reid's going. Andy Reid's going to know. Don't throw it at Fred Warner. They're going to get him to the outside. They're going to be running some stuff, some rollouts for Mahomes to get it to Kelce. But Fred Warner could have a great game. If Fred Warner gets a pick, if Fred Warner holds Kelce to 5 receptions for 70 yards, then I think that you're going to see a San Francisco victory.
If Kelsey only gets 5 receptions, I'll eat my hat, man. Like, I won't even lie. Like, I'll use the old expression, I'll eat my hat. I'm not worried about the reception side of it. It's just, can Fred Warner keep the play in front of him? He can get, 15, 16 receptions in the game if need be, but is it going to be for 100 yards? Is it going to be for 60 yards? Is it going to be for 50 yards, right? So that's the more important part than just the reception part. I guess my third one, probably the weakest one that I have now for my third one, would be, again, kind of going outside the box a little bit. It's Patrick Mahomes versus his own wide receivers. It's can he find actual faith, or is he going to force feed Kelsey? Is he going to try and force feed Rice? Is that going to be the attack? Is he going to try and flip it out to Pacheco? Is he going to try and flip it out to Kadarius Toney if he plays, right? If the defense can find a way to shut down Travis Kelce, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes versus the whole defense. There's no way that those wide receivers, as far as I could see, help them win this game. So I think they're gonna lose that offensive battle, and he's gonna try and force feed Kelsey. So Mahomes versus the wide receivers is gonna lose. Mahomes versus the tight end running back, they could probably win that.
Rashee Rice has been pretty good recently, and I kind of like what they've been doing, and the Chiefs have just flipped their offensive script recently. And I think you can kind of tell just the way we're talking. I think you and I are leaning in this game, but that Mahomes has just gone to the receivers less. He's gone to Rashee Rice, who he can trust, and he's going to Kelce, and he's going to the running backs more. So I think maybe for this matchup, I'd still say that it's going to be, if it's Mahomes versus the receivers, I guess Mahomes wins because the receivers are going to lose it. I guess if that's what it is. I think that the receivers won't make a ton of plays, but they also don't ask them to make a ton of plays.
That's very true. Yeah.
So my third one is the Kansas City offensive line versus the way the officials are going to call this game. Because Nick Bosa said, and he's right, when he was asked during media days, he had a 4-word response to, what do you know about the Kansas City offensive line? How do you feel about the Kansas City offensive line? His entire response was, they hold a lot. And that is true. Heck, Juwan Taylor at right tackle never stops moving and holds a lot. He is one of the most penalized. I actually think he is the most penalized offensive lineman in the game. He moves a lot. Mm-hmm. We saw that back in week one. He's got problems lining up. He's got problems jumping early, and he's got problems holding. He's going to be facing Nick Bosa all night, and if it's not Nick Bosa, it's going to be Chase Young, and if it's not them, it might be Fred Warner coming from the side. It might be a corner coming from the side of safety. It might be something. They're going to attack Juwan Taylor. You know San Francisco will be smart enough. Steve Wilks, the San Francisco defensive coordinator, will be smart enough to attack Juwan Taylor on the right side. So how do the officials call this game? Are they going to be really tight, or are they going to let Juwan Taylor play? They're going to let him maybe hold Bosa a little bit. Obviously, they'll call the egregious ones. But will they let him hold Bosa a little bit? Will they let him get away with that little lean back and all of that? And I think they're not going to want to slow down the game. And so I think that Juwan Taylor, who's probably the guy who I really should point out here, is going to win this matchup. Juwan Taylor will be able to do what Juwan Taylor does. He will be called for a penalty or two in this game. It's going to happen. The Chiefs write that into their game plan, I'm sure, that Juwan Taylor's going to have 15 yards of penalties. He's going to have a hold, and he's going to have a false start. Can you work around that, and can you not get 30 yards of penalties on Juwan Taylor? I think they're going to have a backup left guard. I haven't seen whether or not Joe Tooney's playing, who's probably the best or second best offensive lineman on this team. Mm-hmm. He's got that pec problem. And again, I went to PTI because they were interviewing Jeff Saturday, who said a pec problem for an offensive lineman is huge. You can't play when you have a pec problem because you're trying to bench press the defensive tackle. So right. if you have a pec problem, you can't play. And so Joe Tooney probably isn't going to play. And that's going to leave a spot at left guard. Can that guy not have a bunch of holds and false starts? So the offensive line versus the officials. I think the offensive line wins, but we'll see if there's maybe a key problem or two that ends up costing them late in this game. Heck, we all know last year the officials called a holding call that might have ended this, that pretty much ended the Super Bowl and gave the win to Kansas City, even though I thought it kind of was holding. I think there's plenty of reasons to look at last year's Super Bowl of why Philadelphia didn't win. But give me the Chiefs offensive line to win versus the officials.
You kind of hit it the nail on the head when you said the officials don't want to slow down the game.
Yeah.
They're going to want to keep pace of play up. They don't want to call too many penalties because what is going to happen? All the viewers are going to be like, why do they keep throwing the flags? That's a bullshit call. La, la, la. It's like, it's not because he doesn't stop moving. He hasn't stopped moving. He probably still is moving while he's sleeping, right? But the bigger fear for San Francisco is how many offside or neutral zone infractions are going to happen because they're probably going to want to try and make him jump. Where you've got this, you know, inexperienced, tackle and Juwan Taylor out there, they're going to try and make him jump. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things where I can see more defensive penalties happening than even the offensive side.
Maybe. You know, Nick Bosa will try and play mind games and we'll end up in the neutral zone and we'll get that pointing game where both teams just point at each other and do things. I thought this was good. I'm glad neither of us brought up who has less turnovers, who wins time of possession. Yeah. I'm glad we didn't do that.
Boring?
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't do that. That was good. So, people who are listening, you've already figured out who we have winning this game because I can guarantee that you have the Niners and I have the Chiefs. So I'll go first here. I think the Chiefs win this game. I think that Brock Purdy's going to struggle. He's going to throw an interception or two. Mahomes steps up in these games. And as I'm thinking about it, I can't pick against the Chiefs in this game. There's nothing about San Francisco right now that absolutely terrifies me because they have a really good offense. But I saw the Lions' terrible defense hold it okay in the first half and then get obliterated by it in the second half. But that was because of the Lions' own mistakes. They were a couple of plays away from still winning that game anyway. Big plays happen against this 49ers secondary. You're going to get Rashee Rice out in space and make a couple of big plays. They're going to get, I think, Pacheco some runs early. Mahomes is going to run and make some plays, something Goff couldn't do. Against San Francisco. Not that they had a ton of pressure on him anyway. But Kansas City's defense, I think, is what's really going to step up. They're going to make life hell for Purdy. McCaffrey's going to get 70 yards. It's what he does. McCaffrey's going to get his yards. McCaffrey will get a touchdown in this game. But Kansas City's going to make the plays when they need to make the plays. They're going to get a third down stop. Watch for George Karloftis to make a tackle at some point in this game that's big. He's been great in the postseason. So give me Kansas City to win this game. Low scoring, though. I don't think we get up in the 30s or something. Give me Kansas City to win this game 24-20. 24-16. Something like that. It's one score game. But I feel like it's a game that Kansas City kind of controls.
Yeah. I'm going to give you the worst cop-out answer. That's not good for radio, and for taking on sports. Because if I were going to put my real life money on it, okay. I would not put it on 49ers. Okay. If I'm going to put money down, it's going to be the Kansas City just because of exactly what you said. Kansas City finds a way to win games. I want San Francisco to win. I'm rooting for Brock Purdy. I know. Hey, listen, I'm not a Lions fan, but I understand your pain. Like I said before the show, we were talking about, you know, how I can relate to this. It's the 2015 Mets versus the Cubs. So forever, ever will the Mets be hated by me. But yeah, I would like to see the 49ers win, and I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I'm going to pick the opposite, though. I will pick the 49ers to win this game. It's going to be 20-17. I think it's going to be that kind of a game. It will be a one score. It's going to be probably a field goal to win it at the end kind of deal. It's whoever's got the ball last will win this game.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking about it. I'm going 2 touchdowns and 3 field goals for Kansas City, so that's 23. So I'll go 23-17 or 23-20, something like that will be my final score. 23-21, maybe. That sounds even better. 3 touchdowns for San Francisco. Yeah. So
I mean, either way you put it, I mean, it's going to be that one-score game for either of us. The part of me that is like, you know what, I'm rooting for Mr. Irrelevant. I'm rooting for McCaffrey to be there again and to win it this time. And I'm rooting for just Kyle Shanahan finally too to finally make it over the hump. He's, you know, in that talks of, well, he hasn't gotten over the hump yet and he hasn't gotten there yet. And then for everybody to finally shut up about Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy's a good quarterback. Is he going to be a Hall of Famer one day? Probably not, but he's a damn good quarterback, so everybody needs to shut up about it.
Even if Brock Purdy wins this game, no one's going to shut up about Brock Purdy. If he throws for 220 yards and 2 touchdowns, people are going to say the same thing they've been saying. It's the system. It's Christian McCaffrey. It's Deebo Samuel. Nobody's going to at all stop talking about Brock Purdy. I agree with you. I think he's a top 10 quarterback in the game, but there's also, like, it's the thing with, like, with Tom Brady, because this is the conversation people had about Brady forever. I'm not comparing them. Brady's better. But it's like Tom Brady. People were always saying, oh, it's Belichick, it's the system, and things like that. I said it for a long time, until eventually I just had to give up when Brady went out there and made big plays, or when he just made throws, or when he won in Tampa. Then it was like, okay, I have to shut my mouth. It wasn't the system. Him and Belichick had a perfect pairing, and that's why they won so much more than everybody else. It was partly the system that helped Brady grow, but then it became Brady, that second iteration. And so right now, it probably is the surroundings of Brock Purdy, but that's okay. The only guys can win without their surroundings? Not many. Almost none can win without their surroundings being perfect. Okay, there's only a few guys in the world like that who can win without it. Josh Allen has not won a Super Bowl. He hasn't had the right surroundings yet. And Josh Allen hasn't gotten out of his own head yet to, you know, just throw the ball 10 yards and get a first down instead of throwing to the end zone type thing. It's so hard to win in this league. That's why guys like Mahomes and Brady should be absolutely revered in this league, because they can win and they have insane talent, especially what we've seen from Mahomes early in his career. So Brock Purdy, people aren't going to stop talking about him, but they should, but they're not going to. Brock Purdy, even if he wins, that means he had to do the job. There's a lot of quarterbacks who haven't done the job. Now, if he has a 35% completion percentage and they still win because McCaffrey is 200 yards, all right, yeah, you're really not going to stop talking. But if he has just a solid game, I'm talking 70% completion percentage, throws for 210 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, and McCaffrey runs in 3 touchdowns, they score 35 points and win the game, people should say, wow, they had the right quarterback for this group. They had the right quarterback for what this group needed. They didn't need a playmaker. They needed a guy who'd run the damn show, and that's okay.
So here's a crazy hypothetical, I guess, you know, to kind of, you know, turn this into hyperbole almost, is, you know, if they win, if they're in the playoffs for the next, let's say, 7 years, right? 7 out of the next 8 or something like that, 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
And they win another Super Bowl. Let's say they win this one and they go and win another one. Would you put him in the same class? I won't say tier maybe, but in the same class as Tom Brady, Drew Brees? You know, if he's the quarterback at the helm, would you put him up there with even Peyton Manning? Peyton Manning's got, what, 2 rings?
Yeah.
Right? 3 appearances?
Yeah.
Same thing with Brock Purdy. Would you put him up there with that if he has even average games, okay, with the talent around him, he stays at a 230 to 240 yard, you know, average for his career, you know, averages 30 to maybe 40. Maybe he touches 40, you know, TDs in a year. Would you put him up in that same class because he's been in the playoffs and had us at least one more ring? Maybe.
Tell you right now, nowhere near Brady. Winning two Super Bowls doesn't get you even close to Brady.
No, you're right. Then you know, Brady's the anomaly. So that's why I kind of brought up, you know, Drew Brees. I brought up Peyton Manning. Even, you know, one guy who didn't win it at all. I know he threw a lot, you know, Dan Marino. But would you put him in that class?
So if he has two Super Bowls by 2030, you know, and is relevant that entire time, maybe loses a couple or even loses a Super Bowl, but plays well type thing.
Sure. Like Sunday.
Yeah, I think you'd have to have him in a discussion with maybe careers like Eli Manning at that point. But the thing about Eli is he's just so clutch, is that Eli made the plays at the end. Right. And now Purdy against the Packers went down the field and made a play. You know, Purdy against the Lions, I feel like that was more about the Lions than Purdy. The Lions falling apart. Just, you know, so Purdy did a nice job. Don't take anything away from Purdy. He made the plays. I'm not going to knock you for making plays. But that felt more like the Lions, less about Purdy driving down the field like it was against Green Bay. He's going to need a signature moment in these games to really get up there with the all-timers in football. But right now, no, I think that it puts him on like a low-tier Hall of Fame trajectory. Like right now, I don't even think he's on Matthew Stafford's level. He's got to do more to get up to that level.
Yes.
But in your hypothetical, if he has two rings and he's leading this team to deep playoff success for the next now 7 years, because I brought up 2030, 6 years, then no, I think that you have to put him up there as like a top 25 career of all time.
Yeah, I agree with that. Where at some point, the tide will have to change. Now, if this is it for Brock Purdy, yeah, I mean, if he doesn't make it to the playoffs at all, maybe one more playoff, I can understand, you know, not taking his career so seriously. But yeah, this guy, again, is a seventh round pick, the very last pick in the draft. He has no expectations, you know, going into this. And now people are still like, you know, well, he's just a part of the system. I'm like, man, come on, he's in the Super Bowl. You know, give him at least a good career so far. And the guy's so young. So in the hypothetical, I don't see him as a Hall of Famer at this rate, even if he has two rings. But yeah, it's the Eli Manning. I don't really see, I don't know, I guess Eli Manning is kind of fringe Hall of Fame. I know we just got done talking about the baseball in the last pod. But again, do we let fringe guys in? Is, even though he went out and beat Tom Brady twice, he was a good, you know, quarterback and threw for what, an average of like 3,000 yards a season, it seemed. But yeah, Brock Purdy, even with two rings at his average, is not going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's there to get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, right now, he's Jared Goff. I mean, Goff made a Super Bowl. He's got to do more if he wants to even get above Jared Goff. And yeah, Goff is a good quarterback in fringe top 10. Right now, that's where Purdy is. I don't think there's a huge difference between Purdy and Goff. They play a little bit differently. Purdy's more of a processor and a is a little bit more mobile, to where Goff is just one of the better throwers of the football in the game. Dude, very underrated arm on Jared Goff. Yes. Insanely accurate, underrated arm, to where Purdy kind of processes the field and hits an open guy. Goff will fire it in just where he wants the ball to go, and it just makes it happen. He's right up there with one of the just more pretty throwers of the game, and that's why it works well with Ben Johnson's system. He just needs to run the play type thing. So anyway, we're not talking about that. Yeah, this is a big moment for Purdy, no doubt. Big moment for Purdy if he can make plays happen, and beating Mahomes matters. Beating Patrick Mahomes matters, but is he, you know, someone who's going to kick off his career and go on to be something great, or is he Nick Foles? And is he a guy who's going to end up petering out? I don't think he's as bad as Nick Foles. That's hyperbole. But I think that he's going to be a good, solid starting quarterback, but is he a top 5 quarterback in the league, or is he a top 15 quarterback in the league? and how he plays on Sunday will go part of the way to deciding where that is. Make sure you check out Taking On Sports on social media. We're going to start posting some audio clips as well. Share those around, please, because as I always say, if you like it, your friends and family probably will too. So share our links around, share our clips around. Make sure you follow and subscribe to us on Spotify, and if you want, on Podbean as well. But I know that's not quite as popular. It's just the medium we use to post this stuff. Looking forward to the Super Bowl on Sunday, and I'm going to take I'm finally going to make a final prediction here. Give me Kansas City 23-21 over the top of San Francisco. I like that. Maybe even Harrison Butker game-winning field goal at the end where they leave Mahomes too much time. Will, I appreciate it. I'm Brad Gressens, Taking On Sports.